You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today's guest is Jared Lopiccolo. He's CEO and founder over at Noble Studios. Jared, welcome to the show.
Adam, thanks for having me. Looking forward to diving in, and hopefully you'll throw some curveball questions at me. Okay,
Jared. There we go. There goes the challenge. I'm in. So today we're going to be talking about entrepreneurship, really, and the changing world. So lots to cover there. But just to get us kicked off, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with what we like to call our Mission Matters Minute. So Jared, at Mission Matters, our aim and our goal is to amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Jared, what mission matters to you?
Well, first of all, I'm happy to be here to extend your vision. So I'll be part of that chain. But you know, we founded the company really on the premise of let's be better every day. And It's this concept that you're content, but you're not fully satisfied, right? So always asking, can I be better? Can we optimize that a bit further? And when we bring that to the table, our team feels it, our clients feel it, our partners feel it. And so that's it. We created it to live a better life.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. And I mean, and for being a part of this collection of missions that we're getting out to our audience and abroad. So great stuff here. I guess just to get us kicked off here, entrepreneurship. I see you're founder of a company. Like, was that always in your blood, or is that something that like came naturally? Like how did all that begin?
Yeah, actually, no, it wasn't in the blood. As I would say, most entrepreneurs are presented an opportunity and you either take it or you don't. I was actually set to be one of the youngest architects in the United States. So I was really focused on that user-centric design. And my wife at the, or partner at the time, she was focused on copywriting. And so she was working in Las Vegas, working with a company that created the What Happens in Vegas Stays in Vegas tagline. I was working at an architecture firm at the time. And then both of us thought, there's an opportunity here for us to move into the digital sort of space and really own that virtual architecture, if you will, as opposed to physical architecture and guiding humans through this, thing that we call the internet. So that was kind of what helped us kick it off.
What year was that? Like just roughly?
Yeah, 2001.
Wow. So that's early on, right?
Yeah. 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 It was at the time where we had to convince people that websites are here to stay, that yes, you even though you have a website, you still have to carry a business card. I remember presenting when Google launched, to like teach people what is Google. So yeah, it was some early days, we were young. And so now I got a little gray to show for it.
What was that? So what was that like? And the reason I asked that question, by the way, is because I do feel a little nostalgic on this piece of it, number one. But number two, for the people that are like taking for granted some of the infrastructure, and we'll get into more complicated, thought process around AI and brand and all these other things. But I want to stay in the old school just a little longer. Like, what was that like? Because I wasn't in this space, that's for sure.
No. Yeah. So I'm 43. So I was, 23-ish, when we started it, 20, and I think that it was exciting, right? It was this like opportunity where everything was possible and nobody really knew how to do it. Right. So every time, you would say, well, have you ever done that before? And, as most entrepreneurs, we say, no, we say, yes, we have, and we sell it. But the reality is that nobody did know how to do it. I mean, we were some of the first to bring HTML5, to the world that we live in. I remember meeting Jeff Hahn. He was the one who created multi-touch. So all of us are pinching and zooming on phones. And I got to meet this guy, and he was all using GIS data and working with Autodesk. And so everything felt new. It felt like there's this like groundbreaking opportunity. And I think part of that was hard because you just sort of chased right opportunities as well. So those shiny objects, which most entrepreneurs or leaders do, but this was a different time where it really was new and opportunity was just at the tips of your fingertips.
Yeah. How was that? I don't want to stereotype here, but many, you know, architects are going to be on the creative side of the brain a lot of the time, but for you to actually, you know, jump over and think of creating that and making that into a business or even going down that route, like, was that an easy, like, stretch for you or leap or?
Yeah. You know, like when in school and when you think about architecture, there's that sort of practice of understanding, like, what problem are you solving? And then you use, you know, you do blueprints and you build, you know, and you navigate humans through physical space. And there's always a goal and a objective when you actually build. And if you think, a lot of those same things transfer right over into the web, right? We have to understand where are humans going? How are they navigating? What do they need right out of this experience? And instead of blueprints for buildings, we created wireframes for websites, and you needed project managers. So it was actually quite analogous to both sides of it. Just it was, one was physical and the other was virtual.
Mm. When did the concept of, like, storytelling, like, start to really hit home for you, or, like, come into play? Like, when did that come about in your career?
Yeah, at first we were building digital experiences for some of the biggest brands, you know, in homes, and we were this sort of really tight, you know, like, used to celebrate the word boutique, right? We were a boutique agency, and that meant we were creative and we can kind of take on any challenge. But I would say about 5 or 6 years in, clients started to say, "Hey, listen, we really love the digital experiences that you are all creating. How about, you know, what do you see about our brand? Like, what do you think about our message and tone? And, you know, do you feel like we're, you know, targeting the right audiences and stuff?" And that started to really open us up to say, okay, we no longer need to inherit brands and extend brands, but we actually are going to create brands and tone and voice and messaging. And then ultimately we started adding other services like performance marketing to where, how are we going to meet those users where they're at that time and bring them into those experiences. But yeah, probably about 5 or 6 years in, you know, we were being challenged by our clients to help them with their brand messaging.
So let's just say, just so my timeline's right here. So if we're starting, like, back in, let's say, 2001, then this would be maybe pre, you know, 2008, like, collapse and everything else. Does that sound about right when that discussion started to?
Yep. And I actually distinctively remember I was sitting in a board meeting, because that was part of, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, you want to put yourself out there and stuff. I'm sitting in a board meeting and everyone's like, "Hey, what's next Tuesday look like in terms of your schedules?" And everyone pulled out their Trio or Palm Pilot.
Palm Pilot, Blackberries, come on.
No, yeah, all the buttons. And I had a little flip phone, and I remember going underneath the desk and flipping it open and saying, "Yeah, that time works for me." No, I was not looking at my schedule at all. And so, yeah, going back to it, it's just that moment in time was just a very exciting opportunity that anything was possible. And it was fun to create in that moment.
Yeah. And what I see this is kind of like, even throughout your career, and I just see, and I've seen some similarities just in the market overall, like this concept of brand and as technology's gotten better, as you know, it's become like, that used to be something that only, like, the big guys. I mean, if we go all the way back to the Mad Men days or whatever else, I mean, I know it's going way back before, you know, digitization, obviously, but, like, that used to be in that concept, and having those conversations about brand and storytelling was only for the big guys. But now, like, I just see, like, there's just more access, the knowledge is there. And, you know, I see even little brands that are coming up and, you know, eating some people's lunch. So I think the evolution of brand is interesting.
Yeah, when I was, this is actually one of the reasons why I was attracted towards the brand and marketing space was I was working for an architecture firm. And you can imagine it was in Vegas. So they're working on big resorts, right? Really large resorts. But similar to, like, the Disney brand, which is a very user-centric brand, like, every touch point, right? The wallpaper has Disney paraphernalia, the carpet, the spoons, the plating, the music.
My AirPods, everything. Yeah. I mean, I can't get away from it. No, Disney radio, it's my favorite. It makes me happy, whatever.
See, no, it is. It's true. It's everywhere. It's in our life. It permeates through our lives. And to your point, those big brands were the only ones that really could own all of those touch points. And I just remember getting really excited about, you know, being assigned to not only design this resort, but also the pre and then during and post experience that these humans would have with these physical places. And a lot of it was digital. Like, hey, we had to build websites. And to think that an architect would take on building a website, it just showed that they really cared about making sure that, you know, you really owned that full brand touch, full user experience kind of stuff. And so that drove us to getting into this space. And now we get to extend brands into every touch point of people's lives. And we love that. We love fulfilling for our clients' customers.
Talk a little bit about your approach and your team's approach really to the creative process and, like, let's say, helping define or build on brands as they come through your doors? Like talk a little bit about the creative process for you.
Yeah, so we have what we call our TM3. It's a proven process, and it's think, make, market, and measure, right? And what that does is we approach whether you're coming in for a campaign that you want us to work on or fulfill, or you want us to look at your entire sort of brand ecosystem. We start with the think, and that, you know, it's, you can imagine what that is. It's qualitative, it's quantitative research, it's stakeholder interviews. It's really digging in, right? Understanding their competitors and, you know, what do they stand for? And then we move over into the make side, which is really about producing something that we're going to put in the hands of our clients' customers. And they're going to ultimately experience that brand. And then the measure, the market part is really about getting it in at the right channels with the right mix, with the right calls to actions, the right, you know, sort of, messaging and imagery and whatnot. And then we optimize, right? And that when that final stage of measurement, we really are optimizing. We're doing the A/B testing. If it's on a website, we're doing conversion rate optimization and making sure that people are able to fulfill on what they're coming to the website for in a shorter amount of time and, you know, less friction, if you will. So we just, with that approach we take to every single interaction, again, whether we're full record agency or whether we're just coming in and fulfilling on one specific service line.
Yeah. And so one of the things that, and a lot of things to unpack in what you just said, but one of the words that I like to talk about is attribution and really being able to tie something back and see, did it work? So when I think about like the importance of brand, it was always there, but whether or not we could measure it meaningfully and we can say, you know, based on making some of these changes, this led to an outcome within a certain period of time that's measurable and that, you know, you can attribute to some of the changes you made. To me, as this increases in quality and increases, it's going to, like, the importance of brand is only going to continue to rise and continue to go up, especially if, like, you're in a competitive space, because that's going to be oftentimes it's not the best product that wins. I know many of the entrepreneurs, I know that's your baby out there and I know, okay, it's the best and you created and it's your idea and nobody in the history of the world ever thought of it. Okay, fine. Yeah. But let's just put that on the side and just say that still doesn't mean you win. Like that still doesn't mean you win. The numbers are still the numbers, right? So I feel like attribution is just gonna, and like being able to track these things and being able to measure is just gonna get better and better. And based on that, story is gonna become that much more important. Like, love to hear your insight, because that's just my, you know, but you're on the inside day in and day out doing this for brands. So tell me your thoughts on like just attribution and like tracking and all of that.
Yeah, I think, well, at the highest level, there's a lot of debate around attribution, right? Does it work and does it not work? And, you know, and so I think the key is to measure at the conversion point and then try to, you know, sort of work backwards from that. So yes, can you give attribution to first click? Like this is the first time that they've experienced a brand, or do you give it all the credit to last click? And then that's the most important channel, but then you're missing all these touch points in between. And what you really find is that you need to follow intent-based signals. That's at the bottom line. And not everyone, you know, has the similar buyer's journey, right? Some people will start in social or they'll end in social, or some people will start at a conference or they'll start with a white paper and they'll end at a website down, you know, scheduling a demo. I think at the end though, the goal is to really monitor those intent signals and then make sure that you're meeting those users at that moment in time, you know, when they need that piece of content or that information. And then the last thing I would say is, you know, whether it's for B2B or whatever else, the goal really is to speak to them in the words that they need to hear, right? So you need to be talking about what problems that they're having and how your solution, service or experience solves that problem. And I think that at the end of the day though, it's all about intent-based signals.
Yeah, I agree with that. And one of the interesting things is, as much as I'm like obsessed with this concept of attribution, and of course, who wouldn't be, right? Because you're spending money and you're spending dollars, right? You have these ideas and that's ultimately validation. But funny story, so I'm at a mixer that we did in Orange County, maybe it was a couple of weeks ago. And we pick up a new client out of that. We're just, you know, in the community. We host a mixer. There's no like real like theme or any sales pitch there. And we're trying to figure out like, where'd this person come from? Right. Come to find out they were on like one of our original shows like 8 years ago that doesn't even exist anymore. Like track that one through the old CRM attribution guy. Maybe you, of course you can, but like... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at some point I feel like story turns into sales and that, and that ultimately like prevails. Like that's ultimately like how I feel about it. Like, talk to me about like story and like even just that concept for some out there that don't quite know that like story does turn into sales. Like, talk to me about that concept.
Yeah. Well, and I just to comment on that piece, I think 8 years is a long time to see that ROI pay off, you know, and to your point, it lived out in the wild for 8 years. And then
you're listening to the show for 8 years. I don't know, right? How am I supposed to know that?
I love it. No, but I think at the end of the day, I think people want to align with brands that they care about, right? That it elicits an emotional response. And so, so when you storytell, right? And even when you just did just now, you were talking about, you know, you visually brought me into Southern California. Yeah. And I think that that's really critical is to humans buy from other humans. And at the end of the day, they're often an emotional purchase, right? When a company, when you're looking at buying something, you say, okay, let's use Amazon, for instance, and I'm buying a widget. Well, this widget and this widget, they're identical. They're the same price. Shipping is the exact same. Number of reviews are the exact same. And the next part becomes an emotional purchase. Like, do I like the color of it? Or does a friend of mine have that? And so I think the goal is to really help to storytell is to find what your sort of end, you know, user, your end customer, how are you going to emotionally connect with that person? And a lot of times it is storytelling, right? And so you see some of the greatest brands doing this. You've got Airbnb, and they're not just saying, you know, here, come and rent this, you know, house. They're talking about all the assets that community has, and they're showcasing all the experiences and things to do. And they're storytelling. They're effectively getting someone hooked into that emotional story. Mm. And then, oh, by the way, we have this product that's called, you know, a home you could rent, you know? So I think it's critical that you do move more into that storytelling, but the goal is you got to understand your audience, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where you really got to know, like, what values, you know, do we need to be speaking to? What pains do they currently have? What does the end state look like, right? Is it this celebratory state of this purchase? And so so that was, I'd leave everybody with, you have to use storytelling to connect with brands, because also we got a million things hitting us on a daily basis that if you don't connect with me emotionally, you're already in my rear view mirror.
Yeah. And that's, I think for some, that's a huge like opportunity and benefit. The fact that we're all being so inundated, because if you are an authentic brand when I mean by authenticity, if you know, whatever your particular mission is or whatever your particular story is, if you recognize how much that matters and understand that for the person that like, even our brand, like I don't think that my voice or my podcast has to be the one that everybody in the world listens to. Sure, would that be amazing? Would that be nice? Okay, great. But I'm not really worried about that. I'm worried about, and I'm just want to connect with one person. Like, hopefully they find that this is valuable, that I'm bringing an entrepreneur or an interview to them that's going to be of meaning and of value in their lives. That's all I'm worried about. Yep. And I'm authentic about that. And that is our mission, to amplify the stories of entrepreneurs and executives. Like, that's what we do. So am I gonna one day, you know, next week start doing something different? No. Like, it's just not us. That's not our brand. And the moment we start doing things like that, like, I think you get yourself in trouble. People don't know what to expect from you. And I feel like that's when a lot of, whether it's in the scaling process or I don't know what different part that is, when people lose their North Star of what they're trying to accomplish and start trying to be everything to everybody, then they lose. Like, they lose traction, and then the story becomes diluted, and then it's just a mess. And now they got to figure out what's next, right?
Yep. I think, and to lead on that, I think some of the best brands, if you look at them, they specialize, right? They really focus on just the one, right? It's not, you know, the Amazons and the Walmarts and things like that. They are the one to many model because they have every product, but that's the brands that are percolating and are successful today are the ones that do, you know, one or a few things, but do them really, really, really well. And they don't try to be, you know, for every single person. And I think that's smart, because as soon as you start to spread yourself thin, as soon as you start to serve, you know, the dollars, if you will, instead of serving the mission, I think you lose your North Star, as you said. And so that's one thing that I would recommend to every entrepreneur, every leader, is to really hold that mission and vision close to the chest, and use it as your sort of, you know, filter, your waypoint, right? As you start to fall off the trail because you start chasing a shiny object or a net new service line or whatever it is. You know, and then you bring yourself back on, and you just see it all the time. People chase technology. And if it doesn't fit within, you know, your core offering, right, of what you do and what you could be known for, then it's probably a distraction.
Yeah. So based on your experience, I got to bring up AI. You've seen,
you've seen
from the beginning, like the beginning of digitization, you've seen all of the things that have taken place from like now to with brand from the beginning of digitization to now. Now everybody's talking about AI.
Yep.
A lot of mixed feelings, a lot of mixed opinions there. Yep. Where do you sit on this issue? Like, how does AI fit into brand?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked. We've always been an early adopting company, right? We like to say that we're on the leading edge, not the bleeding edge. So we're watching people in front of us fall and kind of break their nose a little, and we step back just a hair. But I think, you know, that doesn't mean we didn't run at AI. In fact, I don't know of another agency that's running at it as fast as we are. So we're embracing it, but we're embracing it more from an angle of like it's assisted AI, not full generative AI, right? Yeah. The stuff we put in clients in front of them, never is it just come right off of a platform and into the client's hands. It's got to be, you know,
that would be pretty dangerous. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But I think you see it, right? And you see it a lot of times on the client team side where they've got marketeers internal and they love it. They love the empowerment. They're like, I can do what the agencies used to do, and it comes off polished and it feels right. But those that are veterans, right, that have like a volume of experience that have come through our agency, we look at it and we say, wait a second, you know, that message is misleading, or it's competing with your competitor, or it doesn't attract your audience, or it's isolating another audience. And it's so complex. And so, you know, for us, I'm a big fan. I love it. I literally am like doing Midjourney at night at 10 o'clock at night in my bed, prompting and coming up with stuff and sending it. I couldn't see the eclipse just yesterday. And I was like, oh, I was, you know, and so I prompted up an amazing eclipse in totality, the path of totality. I was going to throw it online. And I thought, no, don't do that. Let's the purist in me didn't want to do that. But the point is you really want to use this as a tool, you know, but you also want to be cautious about it. So we brought our legal counsel in. Yeah. We've got a matrix. We look at every single AI platform that we're using. What are their terms in use? We communicate to that our clients about how we use it. We have an AI task force. Every month we do a show and tell with our team and what they're actually creating and how we've communicated that to the client. So it's pretty exciting. I mean, I love it. And I subscribe to the fact that there are more humans on this planet than there ever was. And there are more employed humans on this planet than there ever was. And I have no reason to think that there won't be more humans and more people employed just because we have a new machine tool, learning tool that we can leverage. So,
I'm a fan of it. I mean, I think it's going to just create more opportunity. It's going to be a bigger market. There's going to be more time for people to spend on things that they like, higher level thinking and things that they want to be doing versus kind of some of the rote routines and tasks. Not comparing this one when I say my next statement, but I'm looking forward to the AI Adam that my team tells me they're building. So there'll be a version of this interview. I mean, I've done over 6,000 interviews now. So, you know, I probably asked a certain amount of questions at some point. So we'll see what happens when the AI Adam comes out, because I'm in. I was like, let's see what you guys make. I'm all for it.
Look, I've got to comment on this, because literally this last quarter, our team generated the GPT Jared version. And so they ingested all of my interviews, all the content writing, and then they fed in our core values from our company and everything. And it's amazing. Like, it literally can spit out stuff that I would normally say. And one of the things they did an analysis, and I haven't dropped an F-bomb yet on the show, but it might happen. They did an analysis of like how often I swear. And it was basically,
I swear
every
your team is great. I love this. Shout out to all of Jared's team. This is amazing.
It's comical, but I guess I swear every 500 words, which is, you know, then we asked it, well, is that above average? And it was like by 4x it's above average. So clearly I've got a potty mouth, you know, is what we needed AI to tell me that though, apparently, you know.
No, this is progress. See, anybody that says the AI is not progress, hey, we can all use it.
And now I'm like, I'm self-conscious. I'm starting to cut back on swearing. I'm like, oh, freaking this and freaking that as opposed to something else, you know, because I'm just like, I think it's such an amazing moment in time. Mm-hmm. I've always embraced innovation. Again, back to mentioning like multi-touch and what did that do? Think about what that did for all of us, you know, and, you know, tablets in bed and phones and this, that, and the other, and now cars and driverless cars, you know, it's just, this is only going to add to it. And, and I just say, embrace it. If you're nervous about it, like grab a glass of wine and, you know, just try to make something with it. And the tools are free, you know? Yeah, I get it. I'm just not concerned about the data privacy and all that stuff. And, and I will say this, a lot of the young generation aren't either. They want a frictionless consumer experience. And if it means giving their data away for that, great. If it means, you know, they have to, you know, be early adopters of technology, but they get to fulfill on what their needs are, then great. But yeah, I'm a big believer that it's an exciting moment in time.
Let's jump around a little bit here and get into some of the niches that you're active in. So travel, tourism, I mean, talk to me a little bit more about some of the niches you cover.
Yeah. So B2B, of course, is a big thing. We've always been in the tech, you know, sort of fintech and tech stage, SaaS and all that. I would say over the last 12 years, we really leaned deep into the travel and tourism space, partly because they're not selling a widget or a gadget or a product. They're selling human experiences. You know, they're selling memories, right? And those things last forever. And so I love their core value and mission of that. But I will say, and we can thank Instagram for this, for making travel sexy, right? The influencers taking a shot in the park and near a waterfall or at a cliff or whatever. We won't go into that. But they made it popular. And so, so we market destinations, right? San Francisco was a big client of ours. We do a lot of Southern California beach towns. Yosemite is a big client of ours. And what am I bringing those up is that these are places that are now experiencing what they call over-tourism. And that's a challenge, because while we want to share these destinations and build these experiences and build these memories, we have to do it in a responsible way. And so, so we already know how to attract visitors. We know how to meet them at the channels that they're at. Now it's about attracting the sort of right visitors. And so for that, you know, we're creating what we call sustainability audiences. So we're looking at people and saying, okay, with this audience, they value things like outdoor sports or stand up, you know, paddle boards or kayaking or hiking or biking. And, you know, they happen to have an EV car and, you know, so, you know, name off all the different attributes.
Yeah.
And so you can create this audience. And then we'd market to them the assets of, say, Lake Tahoe. And then they come into town and they actually stay longer in market. They engage with locals in a more positive way. They, you know, visit non-over tourist, you know, areas, not, you know, so they reduce that sort of impact, you know, that impact on the environment. And then they walk, then they come back. They're repeat visitors as well. And so what client doesn't want a repeat visitor? And so we're really trying to lead the charge when it comes to architecting sustainable travel. And I was just speaking last week at a conference in Vegas about this exact topic. And it's pretty exciting moment in time for the travel and tourism industry.
Man, that is exciting to think about the natural resources side of it, and that, okay, you figured out the, like, it's an evolution. You figured out the, what I'll call the basics, which is, can we get people there profitably, right? Like, and make sure there's an ROI on that check. And now we're finally developing to the point where it's like, yeah, we can do that, but let's make sure we bring the right people that are going to use the facilities the way that we want. And are not going to, you know, for, you know, whatever that is for the particular situation and that they're going to be better clients for, in this case of the parks, of the environment.
Like,
all the cars going through the forest or whatever, versus, you know, the, you know, whatever the opposite is, it's a win, right, for that area.
It is. And for each one of these environments, we're creating what they call stewardship tenants, which really is about connecting the visitor with the local, right? There's always been tension between visitors and locals, because they're like, hey, we live here because we love it, and now we have to share it with everyone. But that's really part of the economy, right? It keeps the wheels turning. So we build these sort of messaging and stewardship tenants where it connects the local and what they believe in, and it educates the visitor when they come into market, and then it supports the local businesses that keep the, again, it keeps that economic wheel, that flywheel turning. Yeah. So that's a really exciting time, because now we have this chance of bringing, to your point, the right visitors into market.
Man, that's huge. I mean, that's progress for humanity. I love it. It's great. Yeah. It's a great story.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Jared, I have to say it has been great having you on the show. I learned a lot. I feel like we went through a whole lot of content in terms of the evolution of not just digital, but the marketplace in general. I just have to ask, I mean, what's next? What's next for you? What's next for Noble Studios?
Yeah. So, you know, thank you for asking. It's been, you know, it's been a good journey, right? With 20 years in the making. And I think we kind of came out of the pandemic, and I think a lot of companies are feeling this pressure of coming out of the pandemic and like, what is next? And, And we just thought we have such a healthy brand. We've affected people positively, all of our stakeholders, right? Whether that's board members to clients, to team members, to partners. And so we're in a growth mode. You know, we have a big 25% growth goal that's set on the company this year. We're in international markets right now. I'd love to wake up one day and we're a 24-hour agency and that we're serving the globe and our brand is positively impacting and we're spreading the message of let's be better every day.
Amazing. And if somebody's listening to this or watching this and they want to connect and follow up with your team, how do they do that?
Well, first, we have our website. Like everyone, go to our website. It's Noble Studios. That's NobleStudios.com. Take a look at case studies. Read some of the thought leadership. If you feel like we're the right company, reach out to us. Or you could even go to my LinkedIn, which is Jared Lopiccolo. It's JarrodLopiccolo. And just send me a direct message. I love to connect with other humans. Learn about their stories. It's the best way to make a friend, right? Is to listen. So I'd love to listen and hear, but I would say, don't sell me shit the first time, maybe the third or fourth time we're interacting, then you can, but otherwise just let's reach out and talk.
Yeah. It's about time you dropped at least one halfway curse word. I was like, man, you don't love us over here at Mission Matters. I mean, what did I do to you, Jared?
I'm really sensitive.
I had to just for good measure. Thank you. I was like, man, it's just we're not.
What the hell? I know. You made me put a jacket on and all that, you know?
Amazing. Well, for everybody watching, just so you know, we'll put the links in the show notes, of course, so that you can just click on the links, head right on over. And if you're new to Mission Matters or to the platform, we're all about bringing on business owners, entrepreneurs, executives, and experts, and having them share their mission, their vision as entrepreneurs. And we all grow together here. That's the aim. If that sounds interesting, this is a daily show. Each and every day, we're bringing you new episodes. So definitely hit that subscribe button because we'd sure love to have you back here so you can hear some more great stories from entrepreneurs. And Jared, again, thank you so much for making some time for us and look forward to continuing to watch the Noble Studios journey. So appreciate it.
Adam, thank you. Appreciate you.